From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg faced Senate members in a highly anticipated congressional hearing on Tuesday, a day before facing House members. In his opening statements to senators, Mr. Zuckerberg issued an apology.
Facebook is an idealistic and optimistic company. For most of our existence, we focused on all of the good that connecting people can do. And as Facebook has grown, people everywhere have gotten a powerful new tool for staying connected to the people they love, for making their voices heard, and for building communities and businesses. Just recently, we've seen the Me Too movement and the March for Our Lives organized, at least in part, on Facebook. After Hurricane Harvey, people came together to raise more than $20 million for relief. And more than 70 million small businesses use Facebook to create jobs and grow. But it's clear now that we didn't do enough to prevent these tools from being used for harm as well. And that goes for fake news, for foreign interference in elections and hate speech, as well as developers and data privacy. We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry.
And that was Mark Zuckerberg, CEO and founder of Facebook, addressing senators on Tuesday. He faced questioning by House members on Wednesday. Among the issues of concern is how millions of Facebook users' private data was collected by a UK-based data company called Cambridge Analytica in helping Donald Trump win the 2016 US election. We turn to Ramesh Srinivasan today. He's the director of the Digital Cultures Lab and associate professor of Information Studies and Design and Media Arts at the University of California, Los Angeles. And his books include Whose Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World, as well as After the Internet, co-authored with Adam Fish. He's been one of our go-to guests on this issue. Welcome back to the show, Ramesh.
Hi, Sonali. It's great to be back with you.
So did you get a sense of what it was that lawmakers have been trying to extract from Mark Zuckerberg during his testimony? It doesn't seem to be that clear. And in the clip that we just played, Zuckerberg referenced several issues: election interference, privacy, data security, fake news, hate speech. What exactly was it that lawmakers have been trying to get from their questioning of Zuckerberg?
I mean, implied in your question is a great point, which is it's not particularly clear. And I think what we see happening with the Senate testimony is that there's a lack of understanding by lawmakers around what people and citizens and users have signed up to do when they've sort of popularized their lives on Facebook itself. So you can see a few different types of agendas surfacing. One is an attempt to disparage and discredit Facebook. I would say that was primarily by a number of the Republican lawmakers, perhaps because Facebook and a lot of the big tech companies are often affiliated with the Democratic Party. I think you also see concern about third party or what is called bad actor interference in our politics and in the lives of users. And, you know, that, of course, relates to the Cambridge Analytica story. You see concerns about kids and youth and so on. But what all of this is ultimately symptomatic of is an inability to get one's head around, in the case of our legislators, what exactly Facebook signifies and how and in what ways Facebook sort of relates to the laws of this land and our ostensible democratic process. It is very, very murky, and it actually speaks to something far more systematic, which is, you know, the rapidly shifting nature of technology, how people get information, and how this actually impacts our politics, and the inability or perhaps absence of understanding of how these sorts of realities are shifting by our lawmakers.
I think a big part of the question is, what exactly is Facebook's goal? And if you hear what Zuckerberg himself says, it echoes this line that a lot of Silicon Valley tech CEOs like to say. They think of themselves as playing this role in creating a utopia. So I want to play for you and our audience another clip of Zuckerberg addressing senators on Tuesday, where he cast discussed Facebook's role as being this tool to help connect people, this very pleasant sounding and powerful, yet in a benign way, means of communicating for people to speak to one another. Here's Zuckerberg again.
And because our service is about helping people connect and information, those mistakes have been different in how they, we try not to make the same mistake multiple times, but in general, a lot of the mistakes are around how people connect to each other just because of the nature of the service. We need to take a more proactive role and a broader view of our responsibility. It's not enough to just build tools. We need to make sure that they're used for good. And that means that we need to now take a more active view in policing the ecosystem, and in watching and kind of looking out and making sure that all of the members in our community are using these tools in a way that's going to be good and healthy.
And that was Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg speaking to senators on Tuesday about trying to police the ecosystem, those were his terms, better as Facebook, you know, tries to ensure that people use its service for good. So Ramesh, it might have started out that way, right? It's possible Facebook started out as this tool to connect what college students, but today, what exactly is its product? Isn't its product data and user information in order to make money?
Ultimately, we are the product, the billions of users of Facebook. And by the way, it's not simply Facebook. It's also all the companies that Facebook owns, of which we might participate, like WhatsApp or like Instagram as well. So, you know, we are the product in the sense that Facebook is extracting value out of the product of our data. And the monetizable commodity is not merely the data, but our immersion, one might say addiction, to the platforms themselves. So there is a lot of kind of discourses that circulate with new technology, and Facebook is no different. Facebook is symptomatic of a much, much larger and more pervasive issue that doesn't simply implicate Facebook itself or Cambridge Analytica. And that really is taking on the mantle of being the connector while actually being really centrally and fundamentally, in my mind, disconnected from the people and users that they claim to serve. So in a sense, it's not in our best interest to be addicted to a platform. Yet that is exactly what Facebook is monetizing. It's not in our best interest for us to be giving up data without us having any awareness around how it is being used, how it is being collected, and the possibility of third-party manipulation, which is what we've seen happen. But that's exactly what Facebook, the connector, has achieved. And that is because it supports Facebook's economic model, right? And it's the ultimate algorithm of them all, if you will, is capital market valuation. And that is ultimately what Facebook is attempting to preserve and maintain and grow.
Right. It's really interesting when we think about this uncharted territory that Facebook has gone into. It has created an economic model that has facilitated some of the very abuses. So let's think about what exactly it is. One of the senators on Tuesday asked Zuckerberg a question about what users would be charged for an ad-free experience. And Zuckerberg made this comment about how people prefer relevant ads to irrelevant ads.
Even though some people don't like ads, people really don't like ads that aren't relevant. And while there is some discomfort, for sure, with using information in making ads more relevant, the overwhelming feedback that we get from our community is that people would rather have us show relevant content there than not. So we offer this control that you're referencing. Some people use it. It's not the majority of people on Facebook. And I think that's a good level of control to offer. We think offering an ad-supported service is the most aligned with our mission of trying to help connect everyone in the world. because we want to offer a free service that everyone can afford.
Okay.
That's the only way that we can reach billions of people.
And that's Mark Zuckerberg addressing senators on Tuesday about the use of ads, which is, of course, its business model. Now, it's interesting, Ramesh, because he's saying right here that a lot of people have opted out of using, of giving Facebook access to their preferences to have relevant ads, but it's still the minority of people. And I think what a lot of lawmakers were saying was, shouldn't you allow people to sort of opt into some of these features instead of by default setting them up and then saying, well, users can always opt out?
Well, it's pretty funny. There are a few different lines associated with this that I think bear a little bit of analysis. First of all, this sort of, if you will, innocent statement that, you know, when I was building this technology in my dorm room, I never knew that this could have occurred, as if this is the same sort of identity, same person, same sort of way of looking at the world as someone who built a technology for the Harvard campus in his dorm room. We know that that is certainly not true. That certainly does not influence the decisions that a multi-billion dollar company makes. In addition to that, absolutely, it is very, very difficult in general with many new technologies, and Facebook is no exception, to actually get in the thick of things, to actually get out of what is the standard and default business model. I think it's quite interesting, and I am skeptical of the claim that Mark Zuckerberg made that we, the users, prefer to be targeted with advertisements. I think that that's quite a self-serving claim.
He said something like, well, nobody likes ads, but we found that people prefer ads that are relevant than ads that are irrelevant. But I mean, right. So he wants us to choose between relevant versus irrelevant ads, whereas a lot of people might say, well, what about choosing between ads and no ads?
And more generally, the idea that relevance is somehow defined in a way that is optimized for Facebook's economic model, right? So if you have power to define what is considered relevant for others so it supports your own interests, then you can maintain that sort of economic and therefore ultimately political model of governance of users. So, you know, there's this question of what is being sold, right? Back to the initial question you asked. It is actually us and our data that is being sold and monetized, which is exactly why advertisers have flocked like crazy to Facebook for their relevant ads to reach us. And we know fully well that the kinds of ads that reach us are so dramatically personalized and can blur into political territory, as we saw with Cambridge Analytica, that in many cases, it's no longer an advertisement in the traditional sense. It is a way of telling a story. It is a way of framing reality that closes us off from alternative ways of seeing reality.
It's an influencer. It's a tool for influencing behavior and voting rather than getting you to buy products. So let's delve into this a little bit. There's this issue of dark post ads and how people are exposed to untraceable messaging. It goes back to the election. And there's the issue of these sort of fake Facebook user accounts. And one might think, well, can't Facebook just police ads like traditional media does? For example, if I am a manufacturer that wants to advertise my products on the pages of the New York Times or in today's landscape on the online New York Times page, I would submit my ad to the New York Times advertising arm, pay for it, boom, it would be done. Every New York Times subscriber would likely see that ad if they went on that page that I paid for. That's not how Facebook ads work, right? What Facebook has done is refuse to let us see our friends' feeds in a straightforward way. It used to be every friend that posted a post, you would see it on your Facebook feed in real time. Just as they were posting, you would see it. Facebook decided it wanted to use that feature. It changed the way our feeds work so that now if you want your posts to be seen by majority of your friends or by the public, you can pay for it. So they created a whole new structure and system of advertising that is very different from the traditional advertising. And thereby you had companies or fake accounts from Russia or wherever able to create posts that were unpublished, hence dark posts, that they paid to appear in people's posts. That's how Facebook makes money. And that's how people can leverage that economic model to influence people's behavior. Did senators get to this issue? Did they cut to the heart of how Facebook is making money in a way that enables all sorts of political problems?
No, I mean, they barely touched on what you explained really wonderfully there, Sonali.
This was the issue.
Exactly. It is the ability to use the data, the incredible fine-grained, granular, sophisticated data that users know almost nothing about, to target them with not advertisements, not the same advertisement, but different versions of advertisements, which then blur into news stories and ways to politically construct a world for them that is so, so, so powerful and lucrative, because your window into the world on Facebook is curated for you based on Facebook's interests and the third party interests that harvest and monetize that platform.
Part one of the story, by the way, just to finish this thought, part one of the story is how these ads are, how users can create fake accounts and influence you, but how they can target you is based on the data that they can extract from other Facebook users, right? So there's one is the issue of very specifically having ads that target just the right kind of people. But to know which those right kind of people are, you have to get data from Facebook. So Facebook has enabled data security breaches, and it has enabled the targeting, very specific targeting of people.
Exactly. And the Facebook targeting tool allows you to not just access someone explicitly, say, for example, Sonali, you know, you were very interested in, you know, want some specific environmental cause. I could target you based on your explicit interest, but it's not as simple as that. I could actually target you based on what Facebook thinks your interests might be. So this is really, really important. You've noted, I believe, in some of your previous programming, how about $30 was spent to target 2,500 people that Facebook decided are neo-Nazi or are white supremacists, right? That doesn't mean that those particular people articulated themselves necessarily in that way. It meant that they had enough data about them out there that Facebook was able to identify them for this targeting to occur. So what does that mean? That means control over your own identity. And we all know that we are influenced by what we see online. Control over your own identity is governed by an entity that does not have your best interest and that is attempting to manipulate and push you into directions that you may not even know of yourself. So that is extremely powerful, if you can imagine, on many levels.
Right. Well, it was remarkable to me that senators asked Mark Zuckerberg to submit proposed regulations for Facebook, right? That's the job of lawmakers, is to regulate corporations, not ask corporations how they'd like to be regulated. But here's an idea, Ramesh. What if lawmakers asked Zuckerberg to stop filtering people's content from people that they have already chosen to befriend? If you and I are friends on Facebook, we've already decided we'd like to see each other's information. We don't need Facebook deciding which information we see and when we see it. So you go back to the original method of people not having their feeds filtered, and you tell Facebook to use a traditional advertising revenue model that other media outlets use. Problem solved. Except, of course, that would mean Facebook would lose a lot of the advertising revenue that they have come to rely on.
Absolutely. You could actually see sort of an implicit reverence toward how Mark Zuckerberg was treated by some of the senators. And that actually is the ultimate underlying system, is what is it that makes money? Facebook would never be interested in doing so. And in fact, if you noticed with some of the responses that came out, is we will police this. We will build better AI systems. We will build better tools where we can govern the ecosystem. All of that is very, very typical, because what it means is that Facebook is claiming responsibility, but actually not taking responsibility in letting itself be governed or regulated from the outside, right? It's saying we will build better AI. But what does that even mean? Who's building the AI? What do we mean by AI?
Artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Precisely, artificial intelligence. So ultimately, the attempt here is, it's a very typical one for technologists, which is let us improve upon our tools without any sort of clarification or disclosure around what improvement means, what values they support, and so on. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very typical. This is not a response that should make us feel assured at all that anything would improve. And if anything, it just means that we're very likely to see erratic behavior from Facebook that they are hoping will ultimately, that this whole story will blow over.
Ramesh, there is an issue of whether Facebook has a monopoly. Earlier, you were talking about our sort of addiction to this platform, but really today, that peer-to-peer communication that Facebook capitalized on and enabled with its, you know, initial model is something we've grown accustomed to, taken for granted the ability to, or, you know, talk to our friends online. It seems like this is something that we should be able to expect given what the internet affords. But the question is, if we don't like Facebook's model, do we have other alternatives? And during the Senate testimony, Zuckerberg was asked whether he thought Facebook was a monopoly, but it is a monopoly. He sort of cited Google and Microsoft and some of these other companies as competitors. But given its reach, Facebook really is a monopoly. And we either try to break up the monopoly or regulate it. And it seems as though Europe is trying to force Facebook into much stronger regulations than the US. This also came up during the Senate hearing. What is it that Europe has asked Facebook to do, and will it apply to Americans as well? Can we thank our European regulators for helping us fix Facebook?
I think the political systems are so different that I think it's extremely unlikely that the data protection laws that are now being applied toward Facebook, and by the way, Google for that matter, mm-hmm. Will be implemented in the United States. I think often such data protection laws are seen by our lawmakers and perhaps even implicitly by our population as anti-growth, as anti-business, and so on. But essentially what the European implementations have been to demand transparency and likely regulation around the collection, monetization, retention, and essentially the targeted use of personal data. This, of course, has impacted Facebook, but with a very, very small percentage of its global users. And to this point that you made, which I think is very important, is Facebook a monopoly? Absolutely, it's a monopoly, and antitrust law would define it as a monopoly because there are no viable competitors to that specific function that we achieve through Facebook itself. And if you add the consideration that Facebook owns a number of other peer-to-peer platforms, which don't really compete, but complement Facebook, like Instagram, like WhatsApp, then you can see it in many senses as a monopoly. It was really kind of funny to see Mark Zuckerberg's response to that question of whether Facebook is a monopoly. Of course, he doesn't want to state it in that manner. But by being the intermediary by which we experience, generally speaking, one another, not one another's videos necessarily, but one another's personal posts, and then the blurring of that into this space of algorithmic confusion and micro-targeting, Facebook has created a monopolistic framework to harvest and monetize our attention and our lives. And I just really need to make this point that you have to understand and respect and empathize with why we went onto Facebook. And this was a point I made today at this conference that I was speaking at Oxford. Hmm. Americans and people across the world don't trust their mainstream media. They don't trust their corporate media. They don't trust neoliberal institutions that they feel have let them down. They see a lot of nice rhetoric, but they see ultimate effects that generate various forms of inequality politically and economically, not to mention culturally. So that is, you know, when we go if we turn to television as an alternative, we don't necessarily trust television. We go to the television networks that we feel reinforce our biases. So it's a natural turn to say, hey, well, I can at least see what Sonali posts on Facebook because I trust Sonali. Sonali has credibility to me, as you may with me. And that is why we went onto Facebook, not just to see baby pictures, not just to connect with yeah. one another, not just to go to parties, but we also went because we thought what we one another would post in terms of news, and I actually spoke to Noam Chomsky about this recently, what one another would post in terms of news would be more credible in our lives. Mm-hmm. What we did not realize is the whole time that space for us, which we thought was peer-to-peer, was being gained on us, that there were all sorts of other hidden operations occurring that made Facebook one of the wealthiest companies in the history of the world.
Well, Ramesh, thank you so much for joining us today, putting these issues into perspective. I'm sure we'll have you back on about these issues in the future. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Sonali.
Ramesh Srinivasan is director of the Digital Cultures Lab and associate professor of information studies and design and media arts at UCLA. He's the author of Whose Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World. His latest book, co-authored with Adam Fish, is called After the Internet. We've been discussing Mark Zuckerberg's congressional testimony. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.